Discussions with Ajahn Chichen in Nurelia, Sri Lanka, October 2015. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Nina, Sarah, John, Anne, Huang, Dambak, Hai, Rajiv, and Vince.
I found that Ajahn gave us a very important reminder. I was telling that I used to dislike waterfalls and did not like to talk about flowers and gardens. Even in Sri Lanka, we talked about flowers. And I would cry because I was so disappointed that the talk was not on Dhamma, but on flowers. So I told Ajahn, and she explained to me it has to be very sincere and not forced at all. And that is the beginning. Then, later on, Panya can also be aware when you are laughing and talking and looking at flowers. But first, you have to be very sincere, not to force anything and be natural. That is so important, to be natural. And then afterwards, Panya can come in and be aware no matter what we are doing. And I found that a very important point, and I would like Ajahn to dwell more on it.
What about Satya Bharami? To be truthful, so truthful to understand reality. So now there are only realities, but with many ideas of different things. Even at moment of the idea is also citta, cetasika, which takes whatever appears as something. That's why when one is so truthful and resolute to reality which is now appearing, the teachings of Buddha is about understanding it. So not other thing to do except listening and remembering what it said. Like now, it's real, it's a reality, and it's not permanent. Just like once upon a time, all one's life and each life is like this, even now, because it will change to be known as lunch or whatever after this, but actually the reality arises and falls away in split seconds. That's why no need to think to do anything at all. Just listen and understanding whatever appears now is only the sign of that which arises and falls away, no matter it is. Even feeling, see, arises and falls away in split seconds. So can you tell what feeling is now? It's gone. As one is trying to answer what feeling, it's gone all the time. That's why knowing that it is not anyone who can try to do, but understanding at moment of seeing about seeing and at moment of whatever appears as it is appearing as something that can be seen. Only a reality, an element, a nature, which can appear only to seeing, and the process of citta, which experiences it. But even we heard a lot about this, it depends on how much accumulated understanding is there. Otherwise, it's only yesterday, this moment is not permanent, again and again and again. Even right now. But still, it takes time, not anyone else at all. But ignorance is so great that once it hearing about whatever appears is not enough. It has to be on and on and on. And no wish, no desire to have it at once or at tomorrow or any time at all. Only when there are enough or proper conditions for any level of understanding will begin to develop little by little. Right now, it doesn't mean that there is no understanding about whatever is appearing now. It is a reality. It's real, see. But the teachings of the Buddha talks about the depth, the subtlety of it as who can understand it as just an element only, which can impinge on the eye base and condition seeing to see it. That's all. No one there at any time, any moment.
But when we are laughing and talking and being distracted, it's so hard. It has to be natural, but...
What do you mean by it's so hard?
Yeah, it's not enough.
See, the idea of self, again, thinking that Panya is not enough.
Yeah.
But Panya begins to understand that it's no one.
Oh, so even when you think Panya is not enough, it's still the self who thinks like that. Yeah, that's good. Good.
Five upadana khanda. And khanda is anything which arises and falls away. So whatever arises and appears is the object of clinging. With ignorance, not understanding it.
But we keep on saying that panya is not enough, you know. And that is ignorance.
Yeah, and if that is not known as a reality,
yeah,
it's no way to become enlightened. Mm-hmm. Not just one desire so much, try so hard.
And like more panya and more panya for who? So it's always for me, right? Yeah.
And I think when you think, oh, more panya needs to be more panya, the trap there is, I'll try to have more. And that's trying. That's wanting. It's a trap.
On the waterfalls and laughing, so we may think, oh, there's so much attachment when I look at the waterfalls, so now I'm not interested in waterfalls or laughing. There's lots of lobha, so better not to laugh. But this isn't any understanding. Again, it's a kind of wrong practice, trying to stop having lobha unnaturally. And like now you say, oh, now you enjoy waterfalls, and you were saying, so perhaps some misunderstanding before when, or not quite being honest when one says before one doesn't like it. It's like there's an idea better not to like it or something like that.
And what you were saying about the waterfalls and flowers reminds me that before your operation you didn't have any contact with your neighbors, but afterwards by dint of circumstances you started to get to know them. So possibly similar kind of idea.
I think I changed in that way. Since I'm alone, I appreciate it very much to have a talk, a chat with a neighbor. And when a day passes by that I don't see anyone, that happens. I feel a bit sad sometimes.
It's sad than a reality.
There are realities, I
yes,
know from you.
Until... Is that me?
No. I have to remember that it's not me, all these things that I tell now to Jonathan.
And when feeling sad, sad is a reality.
Yeah, me. Also that, yeah. That we tend to forget.
So Panya understands the difference between forgetfulness and sati.
Ajahn always emphasizes about by condition, for example, seeing the visible object. What does that mean, condition?
Whatever appears now is conditioned, otherwise it cannot arise at all. But since even it is not known as a reality, how can there be the understanding of its conditions, of its arising?
By conditions, we mean particular causes, like why does seeing arise? It has the causes, conditions for it to arise. It's not I can make seeing arise. If there hadn't been no karma in the past ready to bring its result, there couldn't be seeing. So karma is one cause, one condition pachya in Pali. And another condition is there must be visible object that has arisen already. Seeing cannot arise if no visible object to see. So visible object is another condition. So whatever arises has to arise because there are particular causes or conditions. And we read that there are many different conditions. So different realities arise because of different conditions. So rather than each time saying, oh, seeing now is arising because of karma and so and so and so and so, we just say seeing arises by conditions. Each dharma which arises now arises by conditions, because we can consider more about different conditions. Like each time citta arises, it has to experience an object. So that object, the aramana, is condition. Without an object to experience, seeing couldn't arise. So that is another one. So is that clear?
Every moment, exactly every moment, Ajahn, it is.
What is seen now? So, without visible object, can there be seeing?
No, no.
That's why even visible object is an object of seeing as being object, right? By way of, if we talk about pachya, the reality or whatever is seen, its object, aramana, of citta. Is it difficult for you to remember the Pali term? No, oh, you are used to hear the Pali term enough to not very difficult to talk about, like aramana. What is aramana?
Is by condition. Whatever arises by condition.
Citta arises to experience, right?
Yeah.
And that which citta experienced is called in Pali aramana. So whenever there is citta, there must be aramana. Can there be citta without aramana? No. So aramana is that which is seen at moment of seeing, right? Without the aramana, can seeing arise?
No.
So now what is seen is
aramana.
Is aramana, which is a condition among other conditions, 24. But yeah, so it by since citta has to have aramana as its object, the object aramana is aramana pachya, just only that, aramana pachya. This is the way to learn to understand pachya at moment of experiencing.
For another example, like defilement, dosa, attachment, delusion, are they aramana pachya also?
Be, because whatever experiences arises, it experiences an object. Always there must be object all the time at moment of a reality arises and experiences. So at moment of hearing, is there reality, any reality at moment of hearing?
Yes.
What is it?
Aramana pachya.
What is the amra pachya of hearing?
For sound.
Sound.
Object.
Sound is aramana. So it is a condition of pachya, which is called aramana pachya, because it can be object of citta. That's right.
Thank you, Ajahn. It's my sense.
Yeah. Can citta arise with our aramana?
No, never.
Can rupa arise without being aramana?
No, not at all.
Please, listen again. Can rupa arise without being experienced?
Can rupa arise
without being experienced?
No. Say again one more time.
Can any rupa arise without being experienced?
No.
By citta?
No, they have to arrive with the being.
Are there any sounds arising and falling away, like the sounds of the waterfall, that are not heard by anyone?
No. By condition.
By conditions, there are many sounds arising, but no conditions to hear them.
Can hear.
Like when we pass the waterfall. Actually,
we can see.
But maybe no conditions to hear it, no conditions to see it. Like now, no conditions to hear the waterfall. No conditions to hear some other sounds. Yeah. So rupas arise and fall away all the time.
With anon.
They rise and fall away, but no conditions to hear them. So when Ajahn asked you whether there can be rupas arising which are not heard, all the time there are rupas arising and falling away that are not heard or seen or tasted or touched.
At the like moment, I not understand the body, the answer, the question.
The rupas of the body, the internal organs, for example, those rupas, are they the object of experience?
Yes.
What experience?
For harness, softness.
Is your heart being experienced now?
No.
So the rupas that we take for the organs of the body, internal, they are not object of experience.
No.
But do they arise? Are they arising now?
Yes.
So they are arising, but they are not the object of experience.
No.
So that was Ajahn's question.
But who knows?
Who knows, right, of course, but that's just the question. The question is being directed to the fact that rupas have their own conditions for arising, and those conditions do not include being the object of experience. They arise by other conditions, karma and temperature and so forth.
You mentioned about how this morning I walk on the uphill. My heart beating too fast. Yes, too fast, and breathing very fast also. Yes, it is a condition for the rupa arise and pass away.
That's why we better study the teachings of the Buddha just one word at a time, so that we will have clear comprehension, a clear understanding of whatever is now appearing, right? Now there is what is seen, so we know or understand that it's a reality. We don't mind whether it's visible object or sound or whatever. Anything cannot appear if citta does not experience it. This is the difference between the reality which can experience and the reality which cannot experience. They are both Dhamma. Everything is Dhamma. So we learn to understand whatever is now around us as it is, as not self, in order to have more firm understanding of reality as not self, not by just trying or just talking, but now it is appearing. In order to understand visible object as no one, this is why we talk again about it's there with the four primary rupas, but the four primary rupas cannot impinge on the eye base. Only that which is there with it, and only one object among all realities in any world. This is only a reality which can impinge on the eye base. And if citta does not arise, no one knows about this reality at all, because it does not appear. But whenever citta arises by conditions to see it, then it appears as aramana, object of the seeing consciousness, right? But we don't know yet what condition visible object which is seen, because no understanding of it as no one, no thing in it. And citta which experiences is conditioned to arise. For example, without intention, like we talked about yesterday, attention, feeling, memory, perception, can citta arise?
Sorry, Ajahn, I get lost. I not listen to Ajahn.
Okay, now, that is seeing.
Yes.
And visible object. What is seen now?
Visible object.
Yes, we all talk about visible object. Mm-hmm. But what about the understanding of visible object?
No one there. Only the rupa. Mm-hmm. Rupa and pinchit.
Yeah, but anytime when there is seeing, there is something in it.
Yeah.
Because it seems like nimitta appears at once with the arising of citta, which experiences it. But what would a thought from his enlightenment is that there is nothing in that which appears, no body, because that which is now appearing is there with the four primary rupas. So it's the four primary rupas and other rupa. So how can there be anyone from then on to whenever this appear to see only a characteristic which arises with the four primary rupas, arising and falling again together with the four primary rupas. That's all. That's why even visible object now arises and falls away in split seconds. It lasts for 17 moments of citta. How fast it is. This is to be known in order to have less and less ignorance and attachment to it. If there's still ignorance, there must be attachment. That's why it cannot be detachment or the idea of no self without any understanding at all. So now we learn to understand what is now appearing now, little by little. What appears is only the aramana. So it is the paccaya for citta to arise, right?
Yes, Ajahn, I appreciate your always emphasis about we have to learn one work of the Buddha teaching, only one work. That's why I would like to ask another second question. We must learn one work only, not go further, unless we understand clearly one work Buddha teaching, what they want, what Buddha want to taught to us. We always get lost with the reality.
The second word Ajahn has been talking about is paccaya. So paccaya, we said, is condition. So now we know that aramana, what is experienced, is one paccaya, one condition. Is that correct?
Yes, yes.
Because there must be an object experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ajahn also was talking about how at a moment of seeing, as we discussed yesterday, seeing needs helpers. It needs other mental factors to help it experience visible object. So chetasikas, mental factors, must arise with citta to experience aramana. Is that correct?
Yes.
And yesterday did we discuss that chetana is one mental factor that must arise with every citta to experience the object?
Yes.
And manasikara was another chetasika that must arise with citta to experience the object. Is that correct?
Yes.
So we discussed how even now, at each moment, must be chetana arising, must be manasikara arising, no matter what kind of citta it is. Otherwise, citta cannot experience the aramana, correct?
Yes, yes.
So another condition concerns how these chaitaseekas must arise and condition each other and condition the citta to experience the object. So this is another paccaya, the way that chaitaseekas must arise together with the citta and experience the object. So actually we begin to learn about different paccaya by just talking about what is real now, how seeing now cannot just experience visible object on its own, but it must have these other mental factors arising with it and conditioning it to experience the object. So this is what is meant by paccaya or conditions, different paccaya for each reality to arise. Is that clear? Yeah.
And again, can rupa arise without being aramana?
No. Can rupa arise
without being aramana?
Aramana means object of experience.
Yeah.
So can rupa arise even though it's not experienced?
Can rupa arise?
And if it is not experienced?
No, no. We call rupa have arise with a citta experience.
Rupa. Can rupa arise independently of citta? Which arises first, rupa or citta?
Citta.
Is that right?
Citta always know the object.
Yes, but which arises first? When citta experiences visible object?
Rupa arises first.
So when rupa arises at that time, is it yet the object?
Yes.
That's why we have to come back to realities as different ones, right?
Yeah.
There are two categories, or two types of realities. The reality which cannot experience anything at all. Is there a reality which cannot experience?
Sorry, I don't know why.
Yeah, thinking.
When we talk about, let's say, visible object, can visible object experience anything? Can it know anything? No.
No, no.
Can sound experience anything? Can
no,
it know?
No, no.
No,
no.
Can hardness experience anything or know
no,
anything?
No.
No. So these are all kinds of rupa. So can any rupa experience anything?
No.
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 So when we talk about rupas, they cannot experience anything
at all. Absolutely. No. No.
They arise. They may or may not be experienced, and they fall away. That's all.
No. No.
Can sound arise without conditions?
No.
Can visible object arise without condition?
No.
Can it arise even it's not being experienced?
I have this question. I have. I'm not clear. I don't know why. Like earlier.
Jonathan gave the example of the rupas inside the body, like the rupas that are taken for the heart. And he said the rupas that are taken for the heart, are they experienced now? And you said no, because the rupas that are taken cannot, right? Mm-hmm. Or the rupas that are arising and falling away in the forest out there, are they being experienced now? No,
no, no. No.
So rupas actually all day arise and fall away. Billions and zillions and zillions of zillions of rupas arise and fall away all the time. Rupas that are taken for the body, rupas taken for the house, rupas taken for the forest, and mostly not experienced at all.
No, no.
No. So rupa can arise and fall away and unknown, unexperienced most of the time. Only at moments of seeing or hearing, for example, is rupa experience, but if no seeing or hearing, no rupa experienced. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Give it a try.
Yeah. No try, just not understand. Whatever it has.
Is there any reality right now?
Yes.
Please tell me, what is it?
Visible object.
Okay.
And
okay, just visible object. Can it experience anything?
No.
So even it's a reality, there are many realities which cannot experience any object at all.
Right.
Stay on that.
Yeah.
There are realities which cannot experience, and there are realities which can experience.
Yes.
That's why there are two different kinds of reality.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So, what are the reality which cannot experience right
Rupa.
Now? You
Rupa.
Call it, we call it Rupa. Okay. How many Rupas are now?
Seven. Now? It now?
Yes.
Seeing.
Seeing.
Visible object.
Visible object is one.
Yeah.
And what else?
Sound.
Two.
Harness. Subnet.
Three, four.
Cold. Heat.
Hardness and softness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And cold and heat. And smell? Smell mm-hmm. and taste?
Yeah. Yeah. How many altogether?
Seven.
Very good. Very, very good. Yeah. Today, how many realities are experienced?
At the moment?
Today, from
today, seven?
Now, yes.
Seven?
Seven, yes. Not more.
No more than more, but Rupa more than more, but very subtle.
There are more Rupa than seven,
yeah.
But in a day, only one at a time is experience. Yeah. Can any Rupa experience anything? Never?
No.
Not at all?
No.
Okay. But without the reality which can experience the experiencing, can anything appear?
Yes.
Again, please. If there is no reality which can experience, if there is no any reality which can experience at all, if there is no reality which can experience at all, can there be anything appear?
No.
Right. So, what are the realities which can appear?
Seeing visible objects, sound, which is experiencing something.
Please. What's my question?
So I think there may be
confusion between arise and appear. So we agree that rupas, for example, arise and fall away even though they're not experienced, right? Right, slowly.
Ajahn, yesterday we talked about parami. Then, like, what is the reality of parami called patient? Patience.
Mm-hmm.
Because then,
usually there's no kanti cetasika, right? But there are many cetasikas arising together at different moment. For example, vriya arising with such and such, vriya cetasika arising with such and such. So when we talk about vriya, which can be patient, together with other
Chetasikas like Aloba and Adosa. See?
And the second question is, like we talk about, like when we talked this morning, like the idea of should not doing something, then it's the association with the idea of self and anything that can be controlled.
Who can tell anyone not to do anything or not to do this or not to do that? Who can do that? Who?
But also I think she's asking about when we just have the idea, I should do this or I shouldn't do that.
Thinking.
With what kind of jitta is her question?
It depends. I should kill. What kind of jitta? I should not kill. What kind of jitta?
But in a daily life, we have a lot of things that we kind of like consider, we plan, go as on normal life.
Natural, by conditions. Mm. Who can force it to be different from that? Anything happens by conditions. Mm. Even you try to find out what conditions it, even that moon is conditioned.
Mm. So, is there also the thinking of I should do this in order to have more awareness and understanding, or I shouldn't be doing that, or
even not like I should do that to have more understanding, but I should do that so that, you know, I'd be more liked by other person, or things like in a normal daily life, right? Like I should do more exercise so that I can be better or have a better health, for example. So are they all these thinking, are these with the idea of self, isn't it?
It might be quite correct in a conventional sense to think that exercise is a good thing to do. There's no need to have an idea of self in that. Should can cover a wide range of ideas. It can just be a way of expressing exercise is good. I should do more exercise, sort of the same thing. Or there could be a strong idea of I want to be a much healthier or look a much healthier, stronger person. So we can't generalize. It all depends on the jitta at the moment. But particularly where it involves development of kusala and understanding, that is where there's no doubt an idea of self involved. But in conventional areas, not necessarily at all.
It would be a separation between convention and then the learning of the understanding, or the understanding of development, right?
I think the separation is between the understanding of what the Buddha taught about the development of kusala and understanding, and what is not, what is and is not the development of understanding as taught by the Buddha. Because if we're not thinking about realities, then there's no idea of practice.
What about no matter what it is, when it's not seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, it has to be thinking.
Thinking, as we discussed yesterday, can be wise thinking or unwise thinking. Yoniso manisikara or ayoniso manisikara. So they may be thinking about doing exercise. Usually it's with attachment. But if one has an idea that if one does more exercise, there will be more understanding, then as well as the usual common ordinary attachment, there's also a wrong idea about practice or a wrong view about the way to develop understanding.
We've been talking about exercise, feel better, look better. There can be attachment there, you were saying, or yes, clearly, I want to look better. And or there can be wrong belief in self there.
Mm.
And well, taking when you say thinking of it with self there, maybe you can distinguish how you were you were the one who mentioned it, Jonathan, at first when you're saying with self. Are you meaning ditti or are you meaning what? Thinking with self.
Somebody wrong view, wrong practice, right, at that moment, because one has the idea that by doing more exercise it will lead to healthier mind states, it will lead to more understanding. So it's a wrong view about practice at that moment.
For example, one has heard that good health is one of the supportive conditions for the development of understanding, and so one thinks, okay, then I should be more healthy and that will help my understanding.
That would be a wrong view.
Would be a wrong view.
But if one thinks exercise is good for health and I want to be healthy, that's different.
I don't think we can actually
rule
out the possibility of any wrong view, but normally, right, it's just attachment. We can
That's what I was thinking.
Normally just say that.
Normally just attachment.
Or you could, going back to your question, it could be I should because the doctor has said you should exercise more for whatever reasons, and so there it could be with aversion because you haven't been doing it sort of thing, so I should do more.
The kind of cheetahs that are important rather than the words, like, oh, I should get up earlier, or I should listen to the Dharma. It comes down to the kind of cheetah, not the words spoken or the particular situation that we're in.
I was just using that to get to the point where it's not, I don't think that if the situation, the thinking is not, I should do more exercise so that it gets to a more healthy mental stage, so that it gets more understanding, but just conventional, like if I do more exercise, then I would have more good health. Then if compared to the other one, if we know that having a better health.
No, if you do more exercise, you will have better health.
Right, and that was what I'm saying, like, because then...
We think so, but actually, like, we were talking about different paccaya, so many different paccayas, like what conditions the rupas now, kama, citta, nutriment, temperature. So we speculate, we think that doing more exercise will lead to better health, but who knows about... Mm. What karma will bring what result at each moment. So many different...
Right. Yeah, so I think that was...
That way, but actually no knowing.
Mm.
No knowing what will be conditioned at each moment.
Right. And also maybe with the thinking that I can control something, I can make that happen.
An idea that I can control my health by doing A, B and C can be some wrong understanding for sure, that I can... control anything.
But that would be almost every day. Every day that we could think like that. Right.
We're not just saying it, oh yes, I can do this to be healthy, but anytime there is the belief, the idea that there is a self that can control anything, health or whether visible objects seen or anything else, it's wrong understanding. And that's why it's good to hear and consider more about Paramatta Dharmas, because if we think, oh, I can control whether I go to this restaurant or that restaurant, conventionally it seems like that. But when there's understanding that now, actually just moments of seeing and hearing, who can control whether seeing will arise now and what it will see, whether hearing arises now and what it will hear?
Inside. If we don't even say, okay, so I don't even kind of try or don't even plan or think, that will also still...
Any you, any time that can try or plan, or is it just thinking?
Just thinking.
And is the thinking conditioned or is it in the control of any I? like thinking now I will ask a question or thinking I won't ask a question, is it really I that can control that, or is that thinking at this moment arising because of conditions?
One, yeah.
But I think there's something in between that, the two sides that you've mentioned, because if there's just the understanding that exercise is generally good for health, one doesn't have to think there'll be more or less, or I should or I shouldn't, but there's just possibly a condition to do some exercise or do more without the idea of control about it. So it's neither thinking it can be controlled or not doing nothing, but it's like letting one's understanding of the situation in a conventional sense work its way and have its effect. Because if one's heard that piece of information, then it is going to condition actions in some way or other.
Do we have to find out any time at any situation whether there is a self there or not? Is this the path leading to understanding that there is no self, or is self at that very moment? It's not through thinking or try to find out, but it's the moment of understanding only, not just thinking about it, and the I is trying to find out to know whether that moment is the idea of self or not. But by understanding the characteristic of a reality as not self, no matter if there is self or not, but what is reality then? It can be anything like feeling or experiencing the object or whatever it is. By then, they will bring more about no self later on when wrong understanding the idea of self is there. It can be known at the moment when it's there, but not at the moment when we are trying to find out in what situation or whether now is the self or not. Is there self now? Is there self or idea of self now? You just say yes, but how do you know?
At that moment?
Is there self?
I had that thinking of their self now.
Self that which is not known at that moment of thinking like that. Is not known. Self now.
Moment, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I still had that thinking that the self exists, like me, or like exists in here.
At the moment, the self is not known as there is a self.
Oh, okay.
No. We discussed the Dhamma. So when Thay said to Hai that don't change your mind, at that moment, very possibly there is the idea of self, someone with the mind, and who changed the mind.
Nobody can tell at all.
Kind of conventional world, so it doesn't, maybe it doesn't say anything about the idea of realities.
Tell when someone just...
You says, can see, it's another way trying to find out, but that's the way to understanding it.
And asked you whether self's now, and we just say yes or just say no. But actually, the point is that most of the time, even during a Dhamma discussion, there's lots and lots of avijja, usually no knowing. So if we think, oh, was it self then or not, it's just thinking about what's happened, just speculating, but actually quite unknown. So most of the time, like now, what is known, nothing at all. So just there may be very occasional moments of a little understanding, a little awareness, when there's wise considering of what is real now. But most of the time, like if someone says there's an attachment to seeing now, we may say yes because we know there must be, but actually most of the time it's not known.
That's why we learn about different cittas at different moments. But it's not the direct understanding. But it's the ways to understand that there is no self or adhammas. Otherwise, we don't know that they are dhammas at all. We take it for I all the time. But by learning about different cittas and cetasikas and rupas, it's the way to develop the understanding of no self.
And I think we all have a lot of should and shouldn't type thoughts because they're natural tendency that's been accumulated.
Do you think in the morning on the table, should I have this, should I have that, or you just stretch out to take it?
See, if it's food, I just stretch out to take it.
Thinking about that.
Like this morning, should I have the pineapple? Will it be ripe enough? Or should I try just a little bit? Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying, that not mind reading, just speaking from personal experience. We maybe have the idea that we shouldn't have should or shouldn't thoughts, but they're just other dhammas that arise. So like the dosa and the attachment can be known when it arises.
When we appreciate more that they are just dhammas, that I really cannot control or make anything happen at all, that no matter what way of thinking it is, whether it's thinking should or thinking not with should, that actually just conditioned dhammas, then not so tricky. The tricky is when it's my thinking and I can work it out. But when they're just dhammas which arise and may or may not be understood or known, then take it easy, nothing to work out, nothing to do, or no one to make a decision, because they're just conditioned dhammas at this moment.
There's nothing to do between I should do that and I should do this with understanding, re-understanding.
Actually, no one who can ever do anything.
Just something about the fortune telling. To me, I see it as a kind of sila paramata.
It has nothing to do. It has nothing to do to be the way to the enlightenment.
Okay. So
it's not.
Okay, it's just like wrong view.
Attachment. Why is it a wrong view?
Because some people believe that if they, yes, because usually people go to see the...
Follow the word.
Right, they follow the word.
You don't.
Mm-hmm. Right, is what I meant. So my question is, we know that the Buddha forbid the monks to do the fortune-telling, right?
Because it's not the responsibility of the monk at all.
Right. But did he mention anything about this regarding the lay life? The lay life for the lay people?
Just about right understanding and wrong understanding.
Tell lay people they shouldn't visit the fortune teller, or it's like, I'll go to the cinema, or...
Fortune telling was very common before, when he was when he was born, right?
What about the one who told, what you can say, that predict the Buddha to be?
People who follow astrology and study the stars, and I think same thing, it can be interest or just interest of attachment or wrong understanding.
Think of the person who predicts the Siddhartha Kumar, the prince.
Yeah, so I just mean like it's useless that of listening to such things, or just like speaking for the sake of speaking, it makes no sense. Right?
It's like the waterfall all again. So if one has the idea, oh, useless to go and look at the waterfall because it's all attachment and just saying and thinking useless things, so one
thinks, oh, better avoid the waterfall and better not like the waterfall because it's not Dharma. Wrong understanding, wrong practice. So if one thinks, oh, better not talk about fortune telling or politics or current affairs because it's not useless and it's just nonsense talk, or better not discuss the kinds of food, better only talk about Dharma. Wrong practice, wrong understanding.
Just different object of attachment.
We all have different accumulations, different objects of attachment. But if we think, oh, there's no attachment to looking at this object or that object, but actually maybe we have the idea that because it's attachment, that's why I don't like it. Or I remember Namadom, we had a chat before, there was a discussion about if one thinks one should only talk about Dharma at lunchtime or something like this. Actually, it's wrong practice. It's one forgets about dharmas that are conditioned. One forgets about understanding whatever appears now very naturally. Behind those ideas, there is the idea that I can control lobha. I can stop it arising. If I don't talk about that topic, but I think I'll only talk about dharma, there won't be lobha. Not understanding about dharma as anatta. And that's why it is a kind of wrong practice at those moments.
Yes, but to follow lobha is also another kind, when you may think this is dharma or this is nature or this is accumulation, so it you just do it now.
Not follow the lobha?
Right, good one.
Can you do it, not follow the lobha?
It depends whether there is understanding or not at that moment.
But still, it's not you.
Yes.
At this moment, can you stop following lobha right now in the middle of the Dharma discussion with Ajahn? Is it possible to stop lobha arising now?
The best answer is by solution, right?
Still, I think
in her mind.
Still, I think we should distinguish between the understanding of this is conditioned and the idea that everything is conditioned and following do whatever you want, because it is just. At that moment, it's akusala, it's not understanding. And if we think that that moment it's understanding instead of akusala, then that moment is wrong understanding, because taking akusala to be understanding.
There is the idea that I better not follow or I better do this. For sure, it's wrong view, wrong practice at that moment, because it's not understanding at this very moment, even now, that attachment has arisen already naturally by conditions. No one can choose to follow or not follow. And it's like this at each moment in life. So whether listening to the fortune teller or doing one's work or discussing Dharma, actually just conditioned Dharma. So while one thinks this situation or that situation, forgetting about what is conditioned already.
My point is in a different angle. It's not that I should do this or I should do that, but it's like following whatever one do, thinking that, oh, that it's the right way because it's everything is conditioned. You see, it's different from different angle. Because at the moment of akusala, it's not understanding, right?
Now, like now, at moment of akusala, it's not understanding, like now. So it's like that, no matter how one's life runs. So no need to think about this time and situation or that time and situation, whether Jan is watching television or having Dharma discussion. Just different cheetahs, cheetah seekers, rupas arising, loba, and so on. Same for me, I like to read newspapers. Whether I'm reading newspaper or Dharma book, I don't think one is more suitable or would be better for understanding. I don't think like that at all. I just think no matter how life runs, it's not by my choice or selection, but it's just Dharma which is conditioned to that very moment. And that is Satchinyana, when it's so firm, it doesn't move from this moment. There's no thought about a better time, a better place. I don't think, oh, I should be in Sri Lanka rather than here or this or that. I just don't think like that, because it is just seeing now, no matter when or where. And it depends on accumulations, on Paktu Panisya Pachya, whether understanding at this arises at the moment, not because there's any idea of, oh, if I do this or that, understanding will arise. It has to come back to this moment, no matter how life is.
I think I totally agree, speaking from that perspective, that we should not have any idea at other place, other activities. But on the other hand, we might also, because we heard that everything is conditioned, we think, okay, I just do whatever I want.
It's conditioned.
That is conditioned.
You're saying that's the other extreme, right?
Yes, I talk about the other extreme.
Either way, anyway, it's all conditioned. Yes. If you can think wrongly that I can control it, or you can think... you know, sloppily, I am anatta. Just
I am anatta.
Do what I want, yeah. but it's all conditioned. In any event, so either way, the understanding of the present moment is the only right way out.
But I think lying behind all of this is the idea that one would like things to be other than they are, which is the underlying idea we have and which is strongly accumulated. So that's what prompts us to try these various ideas about how it could be different.
I mean, maybe this is also part of your, what you're saying is, if one has the idea of dharmas or anatta, so never mind if it's sakusala here, because that's also conditioned. Well, yes, it is conditioned, but that doesn't mean that akusala isn't akusala, but it is the understanding that will understand it at this moment, not the changing the situation.
Because I think that we all know that understanding needs condition to develop, and the condition is also associating with wise friends and keep listening to the Dhamma, right? Without having that, I think defilements are also very clever, very, very tricky, and it can also lead us quite far away from. Little by little, we might forget about the Dhamma in the name of Dhamma.
Association with the right friend and hearing. Hearing the Dhamma that is explained in a way that is useful for us. So that's what the wise friend can do.
Wise considering, because someone may listen to the Dhamma. Some people may come to the foundation for 20, 30, 40 years, but still go and follow wrong practice, because it's not about listening to the Dhamma. It's not about how many hours one listens to a jhan, or how much of the Tipitaka one has read, or whether one understands Pali a little bit listened to and carefully considered, very carefully considered, like we were talking about one word, carefully considered.
is more precious than just hearing hours and hours of Dharma, but no understanding because no wise considering. So listening and without considering is useless. It has to be the very careful considering, and it's not a matter of the time or the how many hours or how regular one visits, but whether there is that considering and development of understanding. And it depends on accumulations, whether when one hears what is said, whether there is considering and understanding or not.
I think it also has to be natural and not driven by a sense of it'd be good for me to do it so often or so many times or whatever, or every day this and that.
I totally agree.
Are we now talking about our understanding of Dhamma or of the Dhamma itself? Ideas about Dhamma or about Dhamma itself?
Our ideas about the developments. We're talking about, as is common, our ideas about Dharma or our ideas about understanding rather than Dharmas itself. Is it the wise considering of Dharmas themselves? Is it understanding of Dharma at this moment?
No, it's not the understanding of Dharma at this moment.
Just like trying to find out what Dharma is instead of listening and understanding the way Dharma is. For example, each moment, each reality is conditioned. No matter what we're thinking about, this or that, it's conditioned. And right understanding develop under to see it as no one at all, at moment of that reality arising. Otherwise, one follows one's own, maybe, understanding of Dhamma or thinking a lot about this or that Dhamma, a particular Dhammas. Well, Dhamma is Dhamma. For example, no matter you think I shall or I shall not, it's conditioned. No one who is thinking. That's why there should be the development of understanding what appears through six doorways, not only one. Because at that moment it's mind door, which thinks about whatever one that is thinking right then. But no one who is thinking, this is the point. Not finding out whether such kind of thinking should or should not follow. Very subtle, as Lopa is so very tricky, it can trap around no matter.
It can trap both way.
Yeah, that's why Panya has to develop until it can understand any moment at any time by conditions as a reality, not self.
When you say it can trap both ways?
Both way, like we mentioned earlier, I want to practice or I want to study the Dharma, I want to listen to the Dharma, or I just do whatever I want, break the precepts or whatever because it's conditioned. So it can be both way.
That's why when we study Dharma, we talk about citta, cetasika, and rupa. Because there are four kinds of lopa, mulajita with ditti. This is what we learned, but it's not the try to know whether now it is what. Because it's not the understanding which begins to develop the understanding of reality. But it's the beginning of trying to find out. more and more. That's why when people read the Tipitaka, they have some also many interest in whatever is there that they cannot have such understanding. But they try to know more about it. Because no one can understand the teachings, all the teachings, every word in the Tipitaka, no matter the whole life. Because it's so very subtle, and there are so many foremost like Sariputta and monks in the old days, up to this time, thinking about time. And how can we get what they have got when they heard about the varieties of Sotapanna and Sakatagami and Anagami? What for? Just to satisfy their curiosity. They just want to know. But what about this moment? Not enough condition to understand it. But there are conditions to think a lot about other things, even if they're in Tipitaka. That's why when we read any passage or any word, just to see the depth or the subtlety of reality. For example, seeing right now, it sees, and we talk about its reality, no one, that which has no shape, no form. Whenever it arises, it sees. When we talk about just an element, which is the seeing element, Chakku Vinyana Tatu, see? Because when we talk, when Buddha taught by way of 18 elements, see? Just to help the person who listen to understand, not their own idea about this or that, but follow the teachings with understanding that it is now. Because now even we just talk more and more about seeing is conditioned. It's not time yet to directly aware of it. Because even the right awareness, satipatthana, is conditioned. When it's not enough prayati, no matter who wish to go to anywhere, try to concentrate, it's not sammasati as long as it's not by conditions. So this is the only way to develop the detachment from everything, from the idea of I, self, things, people, because actually there are only different realities, no matter where and when.
I just think about the commentary that Fong the other day started to read, just a small passage, and it's a very long text. A lot of things contained in there. Satipatthana Sutta. In Colombo Cavern, yes. So I think that might be interesting to discuss about many details in that.
Because I think that it depends on accumulation too. For anyone who hear the teachings, who would like to understand what the Buddha taught, or he just want to know, to understand. He just want to. But not seeing the difference between Sammasambuddho and the person and the people today. How much accumulation to really get what is there. Like those in the Buddha's time, who just came to see him, after listening to him, could understand, and that could be the direct understanding until vipassana jnana and enlightenment by conditions. But people today thought that they were like people in the Buddha's time, just read and understand and develop anapanasati and so on, without not understanding Dhamma at all. If there is the understanding of Dhamma, there will not be wrong practice and wrong understanding. So whenever there is wrong practice, wrong understanding, that person does not even understand Dhamma, what Dhamma is.
So in that text, they explain the meaning of sampajana, and they said that sampajana, the four aspects of sampajana, and one is comprehension of the suitability. Yeah. And one is gochara. Yes, and the last one, another one.
Yeah,
gochara is the last one. And the two other ones, it's like the first one. Can you help?
That you know this place is favorable.
Right, the place is favorable.
For the people, like the people should not go to a crowded places, because then he would touch a woman. That is not good. That is explained in the commentary.
Yes.
And
in such word can condition misunderstanding.
And see the usefulness of the development of right understanding.
Mm-hmm. That can condition wrong understanding as well.
Yeah.
And even gochara, knowing the suitable object, can condition misunderstanding.
Oh, the right object of sadhana.
Yeah. So can all be read with the wrong understanding of self, can do avoid certain situations, eat special foods, focus on a particular object. So.
And asamoha, sampajanya, that there is no delusion about the object of satipatthana.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
That means right.
That is the last one.
No delusion. That's right. The important
the last one.
One.
So in regard to the gochara, it said that the bhikkhu, it describes the life of a bhikkhu from the moment he gets up to the moment he goes to sleep. And it describe in a way like, for example, it used the expression keeping the object in mind. So how can we understand it as like the object arises naturally because of accumulations for him? Because when you talk about keeping the object in mind, does that mean that by conditions
what
it arises? It can be one of the 40 objects they mention.
Whatever object, not what object, not what particular object. Like anapanasati, they would say, oh, it's right object because it's there in Mahastipatthana.
But in that sutta, it seems to talk, because Achan also, when you talk about the developments of the kasina, for example, then the earth kasina can become the object of understanding and calm for the one who has the accumulations for it.
Oh, accumulation of understanding too.
Yes, sure. So now I think because they mentioned the four aspects of sampajana, so we agreed about the understanding. Just I'm trying to understand more clearly about keeping the object in mind. So if the kasina,
that when anyone reads the Pitaka, reads with right understanding or with no understanding or with wrong understanding, even one word. For example, gochara sampajanya. See, anything which is real can be object of right understanding. But when he reads in the Tipitaka or Sutta, it's like this person has such and such object. So they take it for their own like or dislike to have it as object. Just follow, no understanding the anatomy at all. Otherwise, people will not practice anapanasati.
Can it not be the case that for some people, they have the accumulation for contemplating on some
then,
object with understanding?
Then anapanasati will happen unexpectedly.
Mm-hmm.
No desire, no wish to go and try and sit and wait and concentrate.
Yes, we're not talking about sitting or concentrating. Is it clear that it talks about the sampajana arise again and again throughout the day? So
like now,
yes,
there can be a moment of being aware of anapana.
by nature, by accumulation, by understanding, no self there. And the characteristic of breath appear as just a reality. And then gone. No attachment, not try again, go again, have again.
Moment of awareness or understanding of visible object now, is that object to the fore? Can we say that object is...
If no sati sampajana, it's not.
No,
that.
But when there is sati sampajana,
yes.
That object is to the fore or whatever.
No, I totally agree with this, like natural arising.
And if there are conditions naturally, like as you mentioned, if there's reflection on death now, as it happens, is that object to the fore? So no matter whether one's talking about samatha or satipatthana, citta arises by conditions and to experience a particular aramana, which means gochara, the same. So just by conditions, whether that object is experienced with understanding or not, if it's experienced with understanding and awareness, that it's keeping that object to the fore. Actually, no one does anything, but that is the object that is known at that moment.
Yeah. And I'm not suggesting that one is doing anything, but just because it mentioned that, so I just wanted to clarify that, does that mean that it arises frequently to that particular person because of accumulations?
Right understanding can see whether there is attachment to that object or not. Mm-hmm. If there is, that is not the right object, because it is the object of attachment. That's why panya detaches, mm-hmm. not cling.
So it's actually the same meaning as upanisya gochara, the object that is suitable for understanding. It just means the object that is understood at that moment. That same object can be object of attachment. Then it's not upanisya gochara that will lead to araka gochara and so on.
And if there is still attachment to that object, it's my accumulation. Mm-hmm. It's not the path again. Because that is attachment, not detachment. Whatever is object of attachment, and whatever is attachment, then it's not the path.
So it's also interesting in one, just in the description of the daily life of the monk, they also mention him going up the stairs to the shrine. So before that, there was the keeping in mind of the object, but once he go up to the shrine, then the virtues of the Buddha are recollected. So that means that because of the developed understanding of that person, so naturally when he comes to the shrine, it conditions moments of recollections of the Buddha's virtues with understanding. How can we understand this?
Can it just be the life of one person? Not to be followed?
Yes, of course. No, I didn't ask that with the purpose of following, just clarify the text.
That's why in Tipitaka there are so many life stories.
Depending on what life and what accumulations, whether moments of samatha with breath as object, or moments of understanding with hardness or visible object, or breath as object, or no rule at all, just totally depending on different accumulations.
But if we talk about samatha, the object has to be experienced again and again in order for anapana to occur, right?
Then we're coming back to talking about Dhamma, not about people. Because you see that for Samatha, what is the reality of Samatha?
Except. You mean the calm? Calm.
Yeah,
yes.
Calm. See? So calm arises with?
With kusala citta.
Kusala citta. Mm-hmm. We don't mind at moment of kusala citta. It can be this moment. See? It's calm. Mm-hmm. But what is the intention to develop calm?
Can be motivated by loba.
So it's not calm. Mm-hmm. Never be calm. But by understanding that akusala is not wholesome, and in a day there are so many akusala, it motivates kusala, and panya leads in any situation to understand whether citta at that moment is calm or not. If it's not panya, people might take only object as object of samatha, but the citta is not calm. So I think that the difference between samatha bhavana and vipassana bhavana is that samatha bhavana see the danger of attachment, and vipassana bhavana sees the danger of ignorance. But it does mean that the development of vipassana, there is no samatha. They go together. But by developing samatha, it does mean that there is the understanding of reality.
So in the case of something like the virtues of the Buddha, the recollection would be a reflection of the person's understanding of the Dhamma. Because without that understanding, there would not be a proper appreciation of the virtues of the Buddha. I think your last question was, the object has to become an object of regular reflection, or something like that. Yeah. So that reflection could be purely irregular and sporadic, and not in any sense thought of as a particular object of reflection, but just happened because
it would depend on the intensity of the understanding and calm that
yes.
has been developed then.
Yes.
Okay. That's a very interesting point. Because usually people think about, okay, we can agree about samatha being the developments of understanding, of calm. But then usually people think that it has to be the vitaka, touching the same object again and again, in order for that to become access concentration and then absorption. But it appears to be depending rather on the intensity of understanding and calmness that has been developed throughout many lives.
That calmness can be developed any time it arises. So it doesn't have to be a particular object, a single object. Because kusala arises in a day, different kinds. And at those moments, the quality of calmness is there and can be recognized. And that's the basis for development of samatha. So the idea of a single object that is repeatedly called to mind doesn't come into the picture as far as the beginning development of samatha is concerned. So what we read in the Visuddhimagga, for example, is for the person who's developed samatha already to a considerable degree, I think.
To that point, I totally agree. So in the Visuddhimagga, so talking about the case of the people who have developed the understanding of calmness and the harmfulness of attachment to a very high degree. So in that case, what is your comments about, because in the Visuddhimagga they mentioned about choosing one object that is suitable to one's temper. So in that case, that means the objects should be contemplated again and again, naturally, of course, because of accumulations. And that objects had to be also naturally, not by focusing, but just by virtues of its accumulated tendency, touched again and again, or it just can happen like you said earlier. Is that clear, my question?
Yes, I think it's difficult for us to appreciate that level of development of samatha. that is the quality of calm, because we don't really know calm when it arises now anyway. And it's a bit like asking about the vipassana jnanas or something like that. But as I see it, there are a lot of preconditions, if you like, that have to be satisfied before we even get to that stage that the Visuddhimagga is describing. Giving up all attachments and work, and even if you're a monk who teaches the Dhamma, teaching the Dhamma is one of the things that has to be totally given up before one receives the subject of contemplation from the other teacher. So how do we understand that?
Very good. I totally appreciate very much when I heard Ajahn explained about samatha, that it has to be developed, like you just mentioned now, in our daily life right now, in understanding each moment of kusala and the calm at that moment naturally. So that is, I think my question was just out of curiosity, but I totally understand that the point you made about our level at this moment, whatever appears has to be understood.
Now, which temperament of those four temperaments do you have?
No, just by curiosity, you know, just not to apply to ourselves, just like...
Because like now in daily life, all temperaments, ignorance, attachment, aversion, all kinds of temperament by conditions, not... And which, if someone has the idea, oh, which objects shall I select? Shall I go and sit on a cushion and reflect on earth or death, because, or the Buddha's virtues, because death or Buddha's virtues are daily recollections, but it's all back to an idea of self and selection, and not understanding how, if there is reflection now, just naturally there can be calm at that moment, but it's an idea of trying to have calm, not understanding what is conditioned already, which is calm, no matter it's a moment of samatha, which may lead to more moments of samatha, more moments of wise reflection on death or the Buddha's virtues, or no matter whether it's a moment of understanding Dhamma.
My guess would be that the monk who we read about in the Visuddhimagga and has developed samatha to quite a degree has samatha with all of those subjects, so he's experienced in all of them, and the selection of a particular one is not like the others are no longer the object of his kusala jitta, but just that there's one particular one that is, he has been told, is particularly suited to his temperament. From then on, it's just because of that, I suppose, being singled out, there'd be conditions for more reflection on what it means and why it conditions calm. But that's not to say that other moments of kusala don't arise and are subject of reflection also.
Who but a Buddha or a very wise one can know what is suitable for reflection at this moment?
In the Visuddhimagga, they said the teacher... The teacher, I guess they are very accomplished teacher, like Arahat. Arahat, yes. Sure, we don't have any today.
Arahat who had attained jhana too. Not just ordinary Arahat. If it's not as difficult as that, think about people in the Buddha's time. Not all monks develop samatha. As we now, we know about samatha is wholesome, and there is no understanding of right understanding. The question is, if there's some, or, and it already depends, shall we develop samatha? See, because we understand reality is not self. So for those in the old days that had developed samatha before listening to the teachings, they, some of them could attain the Four Noble Truths without jhana as its preceding moment. So it's not as easy as, oh, when it's not vipassana, it's samatha. Not like that at all. So if anyone saying that I will or I am developing samatha, no understanding.
If we say this is the suitable object for developing samatha, it's not understanding. Thinking there is the idea of I can select and have more kusala in this way.
They don't realize that they underestimate the teachings of the Buddha, and they undermine the teaching of the Buddha by their wrong understanding and their practice.
I think when Tam mentioned earlier about friends and following other ways, I think that, of course, we care a lot about our friends and family members. So if we think there is some akusala, one would like to help. If one thinks they're not interested in the Dharma, one would like to share it. Or if one thinks someone is going the wrong way, one would like to help. But sometimes one forgets about conditions or accumulations. So I think that we have to just share and help when we have a chance and no expectations. Would you say a little
bit? I think that when everyone is truthful to understand the teaching, by then we can talk. But if that person holds to his own idea, he cannot get it. How can there be the idea of someone, it's arahata, not having the three gems as refuge at all?
Share according to our understanding, or stress what is kusala and useful as we can, but no expectations, because how others will lead their lives, whether they will follow our way or whether they will, like you mentioned, break the precepts or do this or this, will depend on accumulations. And just as we cannot control whether seeing arises or hearing or kusala or akusala now, the same for anyone.
Also, when he asks for it, for
when the person asks for it, if they don't ask for our help or don't wish to hear us or don't wish to listen to what we have to say, then not helpful.
Totally agree. I think the purpose of bringing that subject is to understand more and more in details about, you know, all this, because we need more and more detail to see through all the subtle sort of clingings.
That's why we talk about Dhamma one word at a time, to be clear, we understood.
Like to talk more about the four sampajanyas?
Yes. That we can understand them with right or with wrong understanding, especially the two first, when we read the commentary. And I would like to know, it was long ago that Ajahn explained about Sataka Sampajanya and Sapaya Sampajanya. I remember that was in Thai. And I would like to know with right understanding, but then it has to be not in conventional way, I think. Because then when we read it, it's a conventional explanations, and it can be misunderstood.
The teachings of the Buddha covers the whole life, not only when one study or listening to Dhamma. So sometimes many part of the teachings talking about only one word but covers everything, like samadhi, see, just ekakata cetasika and on and on. And so, like the first sampajanya, sattika sampajanya, is seeing the benefit of whatever is good. So it can be when you know how to wear for this moment. Sataka Sambachanya.
Yes.
Otherwise you get cold.
Yeah, I remember your specialist.
See? So you cannot have time to study Dhamma anymore. See? That's why it starts from the very beginning, very worldly, to the teachings of the Buddha about the absolute reality.
Even some reference to having a clean room or clean house or something.
Think, yeah.
Yeah, and even when sitting too long, stretching. Mm-hmm. That is what you also explained.
Yeah.
Sataka Sambachanya.
Sataka Sambachanya.
And then suitability, then we have Sataya Sambachanya.
So you know, if you don't know.
Suitability?
Then you harm yourself.
Sataka means.
The benefit. Benefit and sapaya is what is suitable. The next one.
Suitable, because it's also necessary.
Because you know that gung does not like you, shrimp does not like Kunina. Shrimp,
yeah.
Does not like Kunina, so you don't have it.
Yeah.
See, this is sapaya sambacanya.
Not suitable for me.
Right.
It's often very conventional way, so just conventionally, okay, shrimp is not suitable for her to eat, this is sapaya, but then it goes down to the, includes to the ultimate level, so at this moment what is suitable is the right understanding of reality, or no matter what circumstance or what time or place. So I think it includes everything from the very conventional or the ordinary meanings, because people before the Buddha's time knew if shrimp wasn't suitable. So it goes from, starts from that right up to understanding of reality.
Yes, and could you explain more on the higher levels, the ultimate sense of sapaya?
Words can condition right understanding.
The word of the Buddha?
Yes, suitable.
The listener can hear that word and consider it rightly at that time.
It's also discussing Dhamma, like we do now. It's sapaya sambacanya.
And even that, even when we talk about discussing Dhamma right now, like, is it the suitable words for everyone at this moment, or, and what words are suitable? Like Tom mentioned before, there was confusion about some points we discussed, so maybe not, even though it's words of Dhamma, not the suitable subject or object for her at that moment. So it has to become more and more closer and closer to this moment, what can be, what is suitable for understanding at this moment.
And using the right words, like, going to a temple for discussion on anapanasati, and then having arguments, and then it is difficult, the discussion. Don't you think so? People had arguments.
Sapaya for kusala, that you see that it can be some understanding, or it can condition later understanding, or the other life understanding.
Who can measure or know what is suitable? Like, even one may talk about the right meaning of anapanasati, or how there is no understanding now of when people focus on the breath and they may be unhappy, but who knows whether it's suitable for wise considering later? Who, impossible to know, because conditions are so complex and subtle.
For example that you give somewhere in a temple, there were some arguments and it didn't help so much. You mentioned that, but I won't say what it was.
You expect more because you expect that they would understand. But who knows?
Yeah.
Better than none. If you don't.
But I think that's also the point about that Ajahn was saying earlier. If we would like to just tell someone what is right and what is wrong, and they're not interested to hear, and if it leads to just arguing or not interested to know, then
it's not Sapaya Sampajanya, it's not the suitable words at that time.
But anyway, I think that they listen.
I mentioned to Nina that some friends mentioned on another trip to Sri Lanka that we weren't on, that some people afterwards said there was a meeting with some locals, but it wasn't, it didn't go very well, or there was some argument that was all.
Just in the same line, I think that sometimes we don't really know exactly how the other people could take from what they hear from the teaching. Last time when Achan and you came to Vietnam, and my mom came to the discussions, I didn't have any expectations that she would understand or anything. I just wanted her to be with good friends and have good time. But after the discussions, it changed a lot. She seemed to appreciate the value of the Dharma, and also seeing more better what is kusala and what is not. Although it doesn't last long, I think she would need more and more, but it really gives me hope. For anyone who attends the Dharma discussions, even with very, very little understanding, but who knows, after many times, it can become more and more and many lifetimes.
And also I remember Shun's parents and, yes, like Tiny Tam's mother, it's, yeah, we don't know, but it's, even if a lot of what is discussed is too difficult, but maybe some points that can be appreciated or understood a little.
Also, as you said, some can join a discussion for 20 or 30 years, but then still follow other practice. Who knows?
Because if it's not really firm, that understanding, it can happen.
And I think the person does not understand Dhamma. Otherwise, it hasn't be like that.
To elaborate more on Satchanyana.
Well, the other two, the rest.
Oh, the other two.
So now okay. It's Satika Sampajanya,
so,
and Sapaya
Sampajanya. But no, Asamoha is the fourth. So that seems to be clearer than what is the object of awareness. Any reality that appears now, but people may have misunderstandings and think that lobha cannot be the object of satipatthana. Even that they can read with wrong understanding.
Someone would say, anapana is suitable for me. Is that Kojira Sampachanya?
It depends. It seems like a selection. He may have accumulations for anapana, but when he speaks in this way, it seems that he just selects that one and not consider all the other objects that appear now as a Dhamma, to know them, just as a Dhamma.
Someone would say, my accumulation is breath as object.
No, it seems like an excuse. It is my accumulation.
Because you see that it depends on understanding. If that person says that I think that breath is suitable for me, it's a kind of selection. Selection. But you don't need to tell anyone, but you know yourself what is your accumulation. How can it be known when the object appears unexpectedly more? You know how. It happened. It's not because your choice or anything, but it's because it's conditioned by what Buddha taught us about the 24 conditions, see? But anyway, it has to be object of detachment. Otherwise, Pandya cannot develop more. That's why many, many traps all around. If it's not a highly developed Pandya, one cannot get out of that trap at all.
Will be that someone reflects a lot on the Buddha's virtues very naturally because of their understanding, but if they think, now I will reflect on the Buddha's virtues because that's a suitable object, then it's wrong practice. Or visible object, it may be that there is more understanding of visible object, or it appears more often than sound, but if one thinks, okay, time to be aware of visible object, wrong.
Or even it's in such and such book, one has to read with right understanding. This is the most important.
Asamoha, sampajanya, no delusion.
Kojra is finished?
It's the right object?
Yes, finished.
Oh, Kojra is finished. We don't know.
Finished?
We can always hear more if you add more.
So it should be what Kojra now is. Kojra sampajanya. No selection. That's the answer.
When we were talking about Satika and Sapaya sampajanya, we were talking about how it covers everything from a very kind of conventional level, like suitable food, right up to what is suitable to hear at this moment, to understanding. With Gotra, is there a kind of conventional or basic level, or just about what is right understanding, what is right object for understanding?
Who knows one's own accumulation? If nothing arises now. So there can be understanding only when it arises. So when it arises more often, you know the accumulation. But the accumulation of avijja is there too. And accumulation of doubt is there too. So right understanding can understand whatever it is. That's why right understanding, it's not enough. Only level of intellectual understanding is not enough. And it grows very, very slowly, like creeping, or what you say, very slow, move to develop by itself and by other sankharakanda. See, that's why it's like a test all the time. And one knows how much understanding is there, at what level too.
Gotra or Upanisya Gotra, or what is the object? It just depends on the understanding, whether what level, what degree, and so on.
More understanding of the teachings, the more understanding of anattaness. Otherwise, there can never be anything which can eradicate the very deeply latent tendency of wrong understanding of self.
Asamoha, moha is ignorance, so asamoha, when no ignorance of.
That's why, do you remember one sutta about Sapaya Sutta? The Sapaya Sutta, yeah, by Sariputta himself. What is Sapaya?
Impermanence in a sutra.
Any moment. Mm-hmm. Any object.
Oh, well, it's Sapaya to have certain diet or do exercise, but forget about how any moment, any reality, any time. It's not understanding actually what is Sapaya in the deeper sense, because one just thinks of like food or something, but forgets even when it's eating wrong food, there can be understanding even at that moment.
And even any object, there must be a right understanding of the reality which arises and falls away. Otherwise, people do not understand just one word, any object, thinking, the story, and so on, which is Panyati. Panyati is not the object of Patana, Satipatthana at all. Because Sapaya Sutta concerns the arising and falling away of realities. So that means the conditioned reality only.
Can anyone make a brief about that sutta? Because that sutta, Sapaya Sutta, can you? Very short. Anyone can tell me?
Whatever is not permanent is the suitable object to develop right understanding.
Okay. It is a sutta by Sariputta, right? I wanted to say that that's why we see the importance of taking the teaching as a whole.
Just one word at a time, it can bring about all the teachings. Like Dhamma, see, Khanda, Tatu, Ayata, Ariyasaccha, Patijasmupat.
There are two volumes, Buddhist Papa Names. It's also online. And if you want the sutta and you hear the Pali title, you can look up Sapaya Sutta, and it also gives you the place so that you can look it up yourself.
Yeah,
very useful.
So translation that you just gave us, whatever impermanent is the object of understanding, right, can be the object of understanding.
You see, arising and falling away of realities, but
cannot be realized when we are not sure that what is Dhamma and that this moment is Dhamma. It cannot be realized yet that it arises and falls away only later. We know only from intellectual understanding.
Ajahn just talked before that you say that the accumulation, one can know the accumulation of oneself, right? Because like the object would appear more and more to them.
Talking about now, or when the arises more on that particular object? Because there are many objects now, and no one can select object for sati. But when sati arises, it's more often of that object. How come if there is no accumulation before?
It's just to make clear, it's not what kind of accumulation. Is that oneself habit or...
Okay, if there is now the awareness of citta, that faculty of experiencing more than other object, like visible object or loba or so on, can there be the understanding of I do not select? It happens, and how can it happen? There must be accumulation for that. Or even now, if there can be the direct awareness of breath, no selection by anatta, by conditions, by accumulation, that arises. Direct awareness of that. If it does not arise, how can one understand one's accumulation?
Thinking of the sati, I was thinking of like when it's chatting with Hung, I was thinking of like once my know, like she like the sour taste, she like, I like the sweeter taste. So then I was thinking like, we don't need panya to understand that, right?
That is aramanathipati. And then it becomes one's own aramanupanisyapachya. Because citta is acquainted to that object with attachment.
Yeah.
So the object itself is the aramanathipati, but the like of it, which happens very often, becomes one's own aramanupa nisaya pachya.
Aramanu Aramanadipati, the first one, Aramanadipati, is the predominant object. So you like this taste and she likes that taste. So that particular taste is the Aramana, the object, which is predominant, which is experienced with Lobha at that moment. And because it's experienced with Lobha, it becomes the accumulation to like that object more and more. So it becomes the Aramana, which is Upanisya, decisive support. So the object which there is liking to, that liking accumulates to that object and becomes the habit.
No one can know the other's accumulation and like or dislike. People might think that I like stool or something like that. That is not my accumulation or this, the cushion and everything. I like very simple and nothing, see, but no one knows. So they thought about my Aramanadipati. But that is not my Aramanadipati. Once I have this at a certain time, people think that it's my Aramanadipati, but it's not. So many, many moments.
It's very funny at breakfast, because now at breakfast, everything she's ever liked at breakfast is given to her. So it's like on the bus, a 10-course meal. But actually, what she likes is the simplest one. But when people keep offering things, she doesn't like to say no, because it's their kindness and generosity. But what they don't realize is actually, she was telling me yesterday, she may just give up breakfast altogether, and like I have in Hong Kong.
So you cannot read out others, people chitta, right?
But my point was also our own chitta, our own accumulation is very difficult to realize, isn't it?
You say that you can have this, but you cannot have that. See, without accumulation, why do you see like this?
Not, this is the Sapaya Sutta. Oh, you found it, yeah.
I think
it's okay, we can look it
online
up
in
later,
English, yeah. So we have it in our books, and Nina and I remember what it's just a short sutta just talking about that actually what is Sapaya is the understanding of Dhamma that is impermanent. So it just shows that if we're talking about what is suitable, we can start considering in a very conventional way about certain kinds of exercise or having the footstool or not having the footstool or certain kinds of food. But in the deeper meaning, like the Satipatthana Sutta, where all these sampajanyas have to refer to right understanding and awareness of reality, in the deeper sense, what is suitable is the understanding and awareness of the reality now, that is impermanent, that is conditioned.
So it could be
one word that's common even for the Buddha's time, but deeper and deeper meaning.
Any conditioned reality is suitable, not the panyati.
Yesterday, we were on the bus, and then the guide showed us the mountain. You see, and then he said that the Sri Lankan people call that the book, because the shape of that, the top of the mountain looks like a book. And then we just said that, but for another person of different accumulation, he can think of bread, for example. So would that also be influenced by
when it's conditioned?
That's funny to me, because when I heard him say it, somehow I remember him saying it was called the Bible, and I thought, oh, how could the British have done that? I don't think he said that. Did he say book or Bible?
Bible book.
Bible book.
Yeah.
Right, well, it has to, yes, okay. Probably the British that named it.
There should be consideration of each word carefully, like just what you said.
And then asamoha sampajanya. Asamoha sampajanya.
there's moha. But when there's understanding, it has to be at some moha. Without moha, at moment of understanding the object.
We can say that the four sampajanyas all just pointing to understanding of the object, whatever is conditioned to be known at this moment.
That's why if one reads about a monk not going to the temple at such time because so many people, someone would like to follow, just to follow. No understanding. But if one goes, it doesn't matter, as long as there is understanding of any conditioned reality. Actually, he's gone, having gone to already, like here and now.
Chat yesterday evening with Tom and one or two people about the monk's life and the lay life and appreciating the Vinaya and what is suitable or not suitable for the monk and the best way to help the monks. Would you say a little bit more about why the monks, it's not suitable for them to just mix with lay people like in a setting like this?
It's not his accumulation. It's not the monk's accumulation. To be a monk must have different life.
But if the monk, if he doesn't associate life, for example, with Ajahn, people who come to listen to Ajahn mostly are lay people. But if he doesn't have the opportunity to listen to Ajahn, then no opportunity for him to understand correctly. So in that case, if can we say that the benefits of listening to Ajahn is higher than...
If I would say monks' life today are not suitable for the spirit time, this time.
But maybe if they don't have the opportunity to listen, they cannot consider that.
Yeah. Monks' life is not very convenient for this time. At all, according to Vinaya. Even the moment of becoming a monk, from then on. In Thailand, people just become a monk, just wanting to be a monk. And that is not the right purpose at all. Wrong from the very beginning. And if that monk does not study Dharma and Vinaya, what's the use or benefit of becoming a monk?
Not Sampajanya or Santika Sampajanya.
I think that this really involves a lot of, it has a lot of implications, you know, like for us also, we, when Ajahn comes to Vietnam, we invite the monks and the nuns and
at the meetings,
and of course they had to be close to the lay people, but still in our assessment, we still think that it's more, it has more benefits, because if they don't come with us, they would get involved with other lay people anyway.
Not like coming here. Different.
Place like a resort or a place where lay people are just relaxing and living and mixing amongst, because it's not appropriate for monks to be so close. It's different if it's like in a Buddhist center like in Colombo and they stay in the temple and one doesn't mix for lunch or for relaxing and laughing and chit-chatting about other things.
I remember the times when several monks from Thailand, not Thai monks, but other from other countries who had become monks in Thailand, traveled
with Ajahn's group to India, and they were staying in temples and eating separately, and I remember they and the lay people had to work very hard to make sure that they didn't get into situations like this.
Yes, even so, and Nina and I supported some monks to come on another trip to India, but very, very complicated. They cannot stay under the same roof as lay people, and finish the meal must be a certain time, cannot be alone with a female, cannot, for example, after going to the holy places, cannot just go to the place in the hills where we are relaxing and talking about other topics. It's not just, the consideration is not just about where they will hear the Dharma, but what about the rules that they should follow? Because if we support or encourage them to break any of those rules, the consequences are high, conditions for them not to hear Dharma in other lives. So it's more serious than just, oh, not very convenient or something like that. Maybe Ajahn will say more about that and the implications for karma.
To me, I think that if we truthfully respect the three gems, we would know who's the Sangha Ratana. Otherwise, it's wrong, because that person is not worth for respect at all. I couldn't remember whether it's from radio or TV program, the vice abbot of a temple said, I didn't have anything to do in the day, so I cooked for the high monks. What's that? I cooked the food for the high monk. I have nothing to do. See? This is through radio program or television, I'm not sure. It's heard all over. And what about the others who didn't speak out his own life in the day? Walking on such and such place, department store, buying carpet and so on. That is not carpet for the temple or whatever, I don't know.
Doesn't mean one doesn't help or support the bhikkhus. Like in Colombo, we support by giving opportunity for them to hear in a suitable place, but we wouldn't give them any money or something like that. But like John and I gave some funds to Fong to help support them for their lunch or arrangements, because if one gives directly, it's a very serious offense for the monk to handle money or do something. So our job is to, if we can, give an opportunity to hear, but in a way that encourages them to follow the rules of the Vinaya, so no implications of akusala karma. Like, it's different way of life from lay people. If lay people buy carpets or handle money, it's our lifestyle, but for monks it's not. So we should appreciate and respect the Vinaya or the way of life, no matter how they see it or how they behave, but we know better, so it's not appropriate for us to encourage in anything that's not suitable. Like if one, like Jonathan, he was telling me a story about when he came to Sri Lanka and he wished to help a monk return to Thailand. You can't just send some fund or something. So Jonathan came here in order to help him come back and what have you, but you can't just invite someone and not arrange things, and it has to be a man, and all these details are very important.
Anytime we talk about Vinaya, we'd like to make clear the purity of monkhood in order to save them from falling
to the hell or wolf of plain.
You said that you, Sarah, you said that you tried to encourage them to follow the rules. And in the past, when you invite some of the monks to India, and you have to arrange so many things to help them to keep the rules. But I think that if keeping the rule, it doesn't make sense to them, like doesn't stay in the same roof with the lay people or try to eat in a certain town. Because actually, it's like it doesn't suit them. They doesn't care about that. So why you do that?
Because it doesn't suit them because of ignorance, because of not understanding the Dharma at all from the beginning. They don't understand the purpose of the bhikkhu's life. And they don't understand, as Ajahn said, the implications. They don't understand the danger of rebirth in a hell realm or something like that. But for us, if we know better, if we have considered and studied the Vinaya and we know better, then no matter how they behave, like I remember one time in India, there were some monks going around and begging for money, and some people in the group were giving them different things. So not following the Vinaya at all, but we know better, so we won't support or encourage in this way at all. So it's the monk's life is different. So from our example, it's like a way of trying to assist, but if they're not interested, that never mind, it's their accumulation.
I mean, from their point of view, that staying in the same group with the lay people or not staying in that is not different with them.
Point of view, then, if they're not interested to follow any rules or take it seriously, why be a bhikkhu?
Are you saying that if the monk doesn't want to follow a certain rule, then that's the monk's problem and not the lay follower's problem? So, for example, if a monk wants to use money, you would say, well, I'll give him money. Would that be an example? So, for example, if a monk wants to use money, you say, well, I'm happy to give him money.
Okay, I think it's wrong.
No, I would not give.
Well, this is what we're talking about. So if the monk is supposed to stay separately, and we know that.
I think that this, we totally agree that as the lay people, like we have to know the Vinaya and to help the monks live their monkhood in the best way possible. But just in this case of, like, when they come to the Dhamma discussions, not here, but like in Vietnam, for example, for sure they will get involved more with the lay people. And sometimes, you know, in Nha Trang, for example, it's a big place, and they will...
So I would say in Nha Trang, we had the center and they're staying in a monastery temple and they come to discussions suitable. White Sand, a resort, a little tiao or a little bit of fun at the end, people swimming and getting undressed, totally unsuitable.
Mm-hmm.
They better not to invite to something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or like next time in Ho Chi Minh, they stay in the temple, come to the sessions, but if you have 2 or 3 days at the beach at the end and resort, not appropriate.
It's very difficult, I gather, for a monk to be a monk today and to try to keep the Vinaya because it has fallen away so much. Is that right, Ajahn? So there's more and more question then about why people become monks today. And just from my understanding of living in Thai society, some of it do it as a ritual because it's a cultural thing. You do it before you marry, or you might do it after the death of a parent. for 3 months, and it's almost, it becomes, like I say, a ritual with very little attention at all to the Vinaya and the purpose.
Because not understanding the teachings and Vinaya.
So then it
leads to the falling away of the Dhamma generally and the breakup of the Sangha.
Be very difficult for those who wish to follow the Vinaya, try to follow the Vinaya and are serious about the teachings and studying the teachings. It must be very difficult for them to find a place.
Well, I don't think they can. There is no place because it's so widespread. And as you can appreciate, hearing the true Dhamma from a fellow monk, it's very difficult these days, if not impossible.
One lives in a temple where there's good Vinaya, like some of the monks in Colombo were saying, oh, they're considered lazy if they don't meditate or something. What about the understanding of realities? One or two monks in Vietnam made the same comment, so even if they have good understanding and follow good Vinaya, but it's expected they follow a certain routine, which includes periods of sitting meditation, so not supaya sampaja.
So best not to become a monk, and to be able to study freely as one wishes without the restraints of trying to follow a Vinaya which no one else is following and for which there are no real supports or conditions today.
So from our point of view, we can see that it's very difficult to become a monk today. But many monks, they became monks when they were young. They have been monks their own life. They became monks for X reasons. We don't really know. For some are not sincere, and some are sincere. And they never had any education. That question was why. Some don't have any education that could help them to live in the lay life. So that is, I think, very difficult for them to make a decision.
Is there monk today? Are there monks today? According to Vinaya,
very few.
And Dhamma.
A confession.
What about
ask for forgiveness, or asking for forgiveness or confession?
About the monk, because they need something because no one to help him to give the money. This topic argument a lot in Vietnam, because in Vietnam the monk can get the money with the Vinaya, and the lay person can help them to give the money. A lot of monk argument on this topic. But whatever happened, the monk get the money is the broken Buddha rule. But if the monk get the money and the monk confess, can release the because I heard that the
confess and continue to receive money, or confess and stop doing it. Her question is, if the monk breaks the rule of keeping money, and after that he confesses to his fellow monks, does that mean that his bad karma or his bad action, right, or is forgiven, or it doesn't have wiped out? Yeah, is that?
So if it's dry, it's like killing someone and then confess and fine after.
And say if someone kills and then confess, and it's better that at least they realize why it is wrong and they confess. So better than not.
Is the act of killing would bring its own, bring about its own vipaka?
What do you mean by better?
I mean, at least it's better than if someone kills and they have no idea it is wrong and they just go on killing. That's more and more akusala karma. But at least if someone, when they realize it's wrong and they resolve not to do it again, so those moments of kusala, if it's wise reflection.
If doing it again.
And then confess and then keep doing, then...
But there's doing it.
No benefit, because just keep accumulating more and more stronger kusala karma, which will bring its results. If one has the idea, oh, just confess and the akusala is wiped out, not right.
No, because that the akusala karma of the killing will bring vipaka at some time. The confessing, there, I don't know whether there may be kusala in... Is it kusala for the when the monk confesses, if it is sincere?
Well, the Buddha said that the monk who confesses and resolves not to repeat is making progress in the Dhamma. So it can be kusala, obviously, form of kusala, but we can't say, we can't generalize. Exactly.
That may or may not bring, that may or may not bring about kusala results, but nothing can eradicate the gamma that may produce vipaka down the road from the act of killing.
So, in reality, what is the benefit of becoming a monk?
Today, I'm not seeing much.
The time of the Buddha, he was to become an arahata.
And there were conditions for hearing the Dhamma at that time as a monk.
Lay people can become arahat too, like the Buddha's father.
In the Buddha time, what's the benefit?
The benefit is to, if one has the accumulations, truly has the accumulations to lead the monk's life, then it's a life of greater purity than the lay life.
Just a nature way. And it, even that he doesn't become a monk, he still can be a rahan. If he accumulates enough understanding.
Any person who accumulates enough understanding can become arahant, yes.
I still don't...
Well, because the lay life is dusty, is the term used in the suttas. So they have the natural tendency to want to live a purer life of fewer attachments to sense objects.
The benefit of the person, the Buddha's time, to become a monk, because they could live happily in monk's life, as we are happy to live in layman's life.
What is best for him?
Of his accumulation, okay, to live alone with friends who like to hear the teachings and develop kusala from morning up to the moment of...
Just at all in... coming to a place like this, or mixing, associating with lay people in that way, the natural way is to live the way of the arahat and to really understand the purity of that kind of lifestyle.
Like we go in here instead of staying
at home. For the benefit of Dhamma discussion. Otherwise, we go to other place in the Wara area, so many places to go.
Can you also say that as a monk, they had the associations with similar-minded people, and so more exposed to hearing the Buddha's teaching?
It's to be one's own understanding. Each one is different. So anyone who can live happily in monk's life, monkhood, can do that.
But anyone who doesn't have such accumulation live unhappily.
It's always difficult to tell from the circumstances or situations.
To tell anyone at all.
Right. And because when we read in the suttas, we can see that there are monks who are unhappy in their monk's life, but then the Buddha exhorted them to strive on, and then they became arahats at the end.
Because he had accumulation enough to become an arahata, but since the kilesa hadn't been eradicated yet, it's time for kilesa to arise, to disturb him.
The Buddha knew because of his power, but we cannot tell from the outer appearances.
His brother, Nanda, see?
And the nymphs were about Nanda and his attachment to celestial nymphs, wasn't it? And
to women. To this lay life.
To lay
and
life.
He was shown celestial nymphs.
Right.
And then someone else go on up.
I have not good memory about stories at all. Okay. I just know the story, but not the detail.
Anyway, the point. As a monk, he had a lot of attachment to the lay life still. And
he's going to marry the next day,
right,
something like that.
He was about to get married, and he kept thinking about her as a monk. So just conditions for kalesa to arise. But actually, the Buddha knew he had the accumulations to become enlightened.
The story of Nanda, right? Yeah. So the Nanda. So the Buddha used his psychic powers to take him to the deva world and to see the beauty of the celestial beings there. Yes.
Beautiful than his intended bride. So forget about her. Offer. It was just a viewing occasion.
Ajahn, so if there's any value when we pay respect to the monk, even who is not the true monk?
What citta is there?
Yes.
It's the most important.
Yes.
To think about the individual monk, because one can just pay respect to the Sangha, not think about what this one or that one is doing.